Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugapul peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the first peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. Welcome to all our listeners, tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service, and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company.
Well, the start of another week. And it ain't a short one either, isn't that a bugger, eh? Those last couple of short weeks, it was great. The Invasion Day weekend was a good one. Anyway, it's rather overcast. A lot of black clouds around. Looks like there could be some more moisture. It seems to be hanging around. A few good showers over the weekend. And very sad story there, Bundaberg mob people just unable to, a number of people just unable to get their places back. Some of them haven't even got places to go back in. They've been washed down the road. Worst ever in the history of Bundaberg, I believe. We can only be thankful that for those of us that weren't hit that hard, we can only be thankful that we weren't, and feel for those that were, and try and assist and support wherever we can. So dig deep wherever you're in, whichever way. You'll help out. A lot of people need some outside help. And talking about outside help, that's what we're talking. My guest today will be talking about outside help. And we'll be talking about the Kawanyama Airport and conditions at Kawanyama. Kawanyama is a little community, First Nations community, up on the west coast of Cape York. And during the opening up of the wet season, the biggest downpours a couple of weeks back, it did some serious damage to their airport. And that airport is the only access in and out of Kawanyama in the wet. And for a lot of people, even in the dry. There's a lot of people in Kawanyama that don't own vehicles, and particularly four-wheel drive, because there's a couple of hundred K of dirt track, or dirt road, on that run west of Kawanyama. And so this airport is, it's an essential service to have this airport. Now, Kawanyama is a local shire council. It comes under the Act of the Queensland Local Government Act. And the airport has been damaged quite severely. And to talk to me about this is the Deputy CEO, Robbie Sands. Robbie, how are you, my brother? Welcome to Let's Talk.
Yeah, I'm great, thanks. Yep.
Thanks for making yourself available for the discussion today and taking over the Mayor's office in his absence.
Yeah. I have to use the mayor's office for his telephone. Yeah, he's on his way out to Cairns this morning to have some meetings with various departments, yes.
Now, he's obviously travelling by plane, so the airport has been opened up. When did it close and how long it was out of action for?
In the lead-up to Cyclone Oswald that crossed the coast between us and Pormpuraaw and then dumped all the rain all the way down the east coast. On Monday the 21st, when the low was outside in the Gulf here forming into a cyclone, the regular passenger transport plane was en route to Kawanyama and could not land. Fortunately, the plane didn't land because a couple of hours after that, as the cyclone was building up here in the Gulf, we discovered some major damage to our airport, which had to be closed up until last Friday.
So that's a couple of weeks it's been out of action. What sort of hardship, what problems did that cause? I mean, there must have been a hold-up of a range of things. It would have interrupted a range of things in Kawanyama?
Oh, yeah, there was major disruption. There was like 10 days without air transport in and out. So like you said earlier on the introduction, the airstrip in the wet season is the only form of transport or link to the outside world. And I agree with you and what you say as well, is that even in the dry season, a lot of our community members still use the airport to fly out. So, yeah, it was a major disruption. The Kawanyama Local Disaster Management Group under the the EMQ Act are very active in the community. We have regular meetings in the dry season and stuff like that. So we were fairly prepared for what was the cyclone event. We weren't prepared, though, for the disruption at the airport, and we were in meetings every probably 3 or 4 hours a day after the event, trying to sort out how we're going to get keep the lifeline of the airport open. One of the major disruptions to the community was Queensland Health had to work on a plan B to get medications to the people of Kohanyama. As everybody knows out there, Indigenous people in Australia suffer a lot of chronic disease. So that was a major priority for the community, making sure that our people had their medications and also had a route out of the community in terms of medical evacuation. So Queensland Health and the local disaster management group worked fairly closely to sort those things out.
The policing and corrective services or police and justice area, again, is utilised by flying in magistrates and people needing to apply to Cairns for court appearances and stuff like that. Not only health, but there's a range of things. I mean, those school kids, all those young ones that are attending boarding school, leaving Kohanyama, they wouldn't have been able to leave till today.
Exactly right. And, yeah, we've got about 70-odd kids. We've got a lot of kids that are going out for the first time this year as well. So including the 70-odd kids that needed to go out back to school was some of the parents that were taking them down for orientation. And due to this event and the closure of the airport, they missed out on a week of school. And the kids who had to go out for orientation missed out on their week of orientation, which was, again, can cause major disruption to their little school lives when they go out, you know, sort of thing. So, yeah, that was
certainly
a major concern for us, yeah.
Especially in a number of those who are first-timers in leaving home and going into those big, into a big school, a big mainstream school.
Yeah, I went through that process with my son last year, and it was very emotional for the parents and even the young fella, you know. So, yeah, it's trying times, and yeah, it's just going to make things a little bit more difficult for them kids here.
Most certainly. And your supply of fresh fruit, not only medicines and health equipment or health issues, but supplies of fresh food. You're dependent on that airstrip for that.
Yeah, our community, because we're unique on the Cape here, where we don't have barge service. So Kohanyama, like I said, is the only way in and out in the wet season is by plane. So the community has built up a resilience over time. But yeah, again, we haven't had fresh fruit and veggies and fresh perishables items since Monday the 21st in our community yet.
So the stocks, the shelves in that store must be looking a bit sad.
Yeah, definitely the perishable stuff, the essential stuff that people talk about, the long life milks and all those sorts of stuff are fairly well stocked by the retail store. But yes, the perishable stuff now that the community would like to get a taste of again, yeah.
And this wet, it interrupts the hunting, the bush tucker, going fishing, catching and getting that bush tucker and stuff like that. It would interrupt that as well?
No, not really. Our community are used to that and adjust to the seasons for hunting and gathering. And the community were quite prepared that if they couldn't get a lot of their staples out of the retail store and stuff, that they go out hunting. Yeah, so there was a lot of people out hunting on the weekend. And it's a usual thing for our community. Yeah.
Yeah, no, very good. Robbie, how many people, what's the population in Kohanyama?
We've got about 1,200 people, I think, and we've been saying that for a long time now. But, yeah, our census this from 2011 should be feeling it in close to the mark of about 1,200 people, yeah.
And for the benefit of some of our listeners, particularly some new listeners, what's Kohanyama is on the west coast, so what is it, some 500, 600 kilometres to drive across from Cairns?
Yeah, if you look on the map, we're sort of directly west of Cooktown on the same latitude, I think it is. So you're directly west of Cooktown, about 650-odd kilometres west of Cairns and about 300 kilometres north of Currumbra. So if people know where the fishing port of Currumbra is, we're about 300 kilometres north of them. Yeah.
Some of that road is unsealed?
Most of it is unsealed, yes. And like you say, when the wet season comes and closes in, yeah, we can't get out by road anyway. In the height of our wet season, we can't even get out to the fishing spots. We have to walk out to go and hunt and gather if we want to go out, yeah.
Yes, yes. And what's the makeup of Koanyama? I mean, you've got health services, police, school. Tell us a little bit so people get a bit of an idea of what makes up Koanyama in services and infrastructure.
Yeah, we've got up to an 11-man police station. We have a primary healthcare clinic to help us out with our medical needs. If people need to be hospitalised, they get evac'd out of Koanyama by Royal Flying Doctor Service. We have about 230-odd students in our school that goes up to grade 10. The majority of our grade 8, 9 and 10 students goes out for boarding school. That's an option provided by Abstudy. Our school doesn't go up to grade 11 and 12 for our kids who want to go to those levels of schooling have to go out. We have a fairly modern community, and just like any other town, and we want to build up towards that, and that's why it's vitally important that we get the correct funding to make our airport resilient. I heard on the radio this morning Minister David Crisafulli, a local government minister, and I think he's a minister for reconstruction, I think, after big events like we had with Tropical Cyclone Oswald and the low after that. And, he was saying that he wants to explore building more resilience into communities. He mentioned Koanyama and its airport, and he was mentioning things about a tripartite form of funding, meaning the state, the federal, and the local governments all chip in to better utilise the NDRRA funding. The message that needs to be made clear for us members of Indigenous communities in the state of Queensland is we don't have a rate base because of our land tenure, so it'll be very difficult for us to be the third party to putting in a bit of money to get our airport more resilient to what it is because we don't have a rate base, and that's just the nature of our communities were set up throughout history.
Yes, we'll talk about that some more. However, over the weekend, I've noticed on one of the news bulletins on television that Campbell Newman, the Premier, has appointed two more army personnel to go in and coordinate the rebuild, one that's responsible for the northern part of the state, one responsible for the southern part of the state. This has got to be a good thing that there are people that they appear to be experienced people in this sort of field, and that's why he's appointed them, obviously. However, the army could be used, and this could be a good thing for Koanyama, the army could be used in a big way for the airstrip repair work out there. I mean, I think it's a big job, isn't it? Is it not? I mean, what is the problem with the airport? And is there something like, do you think that might be a welcome opportunity for the army to come in and assist with their heavy machinery and expertise and stuff? But what's the problem? What is the issue with the airport?
The issue at the airport at the moment is that the bitumen seal base is getting old. The airport was sealed in our community back in about 91, 92. So the bitumen base is getting on to 20 years old at the moment. It's getting brittle and old. And then the underlying base, which is underneath the bitumen, is starting now to fail. And that's where we need the assistance to make the airport, turn it back into a manner where it'll be safe for our planes to land. Yeah, and we have to bring it up to a standard where the RPT can land safely. At the moment, we're just meeting that standard, and it's a daily monitoring thing that we have to monitor the airport. So the airport is reopened on a daily basis, and it just has to be monitored and reassessed after every time the RPT lands. So, yeah, the airport is in a state that planes can land, but there still needs to be a lot of work done on it in the dry season. The council last year noticed that the airport was starting to have some problems, and we got an engineer to come out and actually do a report on the airport. And then as a result of that engineering report, we put in funding bids both to the state government and the Australian governments, and then those bids were knocked back because of the programs had closed, all the money had been divvied out. And now this is where we've arrived at now in the 2013 wet season. Our airport was forced to be closed then.
When you say RPT land, what's RPT? Is it referring to a plane or something?
That's the regular passenger transport, so that's SkyTrans that services the community, yes. Just like Jetstar, you know, that flies to Brisbane.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the fact that local government shire council, the Aboriginal local government shire council, don't have a rate base, that's because of the land tenure, which is it's deeds of grant in trust, is it not? Just explain to us why there is no rate base. What's the issue?
Well, the former tenure is, like you said, the deeds of grant in trust, which is held in trusteeship by the Koanyama Council for the benefit of the Koanyama community. Because there's no freeholding in the community, no freehold land, and that's in any Indigenous community, shire councils cannot form a rate base because there's no freehold land. So all the land is owned by the community. So there's no income generated from rates, just like any other mainstream council, because we don't have freehold tenure on property and people don't own the land to pay for the services. So that's the issue right across our 18-odd communities in the state.
All right. So it's essential then that the state government, federal government, come to the party here and sort this problem out.
Yeah, well, under the NDRRA scope...
What's that? What's NDRRA?
That's Natural Disaster Resilience and Restoration Agreement, I think it is. Yeah, mm-hmm. So after big disasters or events, wet weather and stuff like that, the state and federal government trigger NDRRA payments to affected shires. So one of the payments that we can receive here in Koanyama is restoration of essential public assets. So that would be the funding that we would be seeking from the state government through NDRRA, is the restoration of the essential public asset, which is the Koanyama airstrip. Without that funding, the airport will not be able to be reopened in a permanent way, and again, we won't have a direct link to the to mainstream services if we don't attract that type of dollars. Our engineering estimates at the moment is putting the figure up to build the airport up to a resilient state and back to the way it should be, which is a number of about $4 million.
All right. Now, you have to review that surface after each plane lands and takes off.
Yeah, that's one of the requirements. Under our Koanyama Airport operating procedures, that is done anyway, but we just have to be more diligent in that regard to make sure that the airport is safe for our people to travel from here.
How many flights a day or a day?
We get one regular passenger transport service from SkyTrans a day, and then we have all the other charters and Royal Flying Doctor service and corrective services and stuff using our airport there. So, like I say, it's the only way in and out of the community. So, yeah, we need to build it back up to the way it should be. And, yeah, that's what we're going to be doing between now and the wet season ending, yeah.
So you see, well, when do you expect the wet season to end and be able to allow time to get this airport, your landing strip repaired?
Well, like you say, I like the idea about the army assisting us to get it repaired. That'll be working probably say August, September when roads are open and you can get every machinery out to the community. Yeah.
Is there any, once that airstrip is starting to be dug up and stuff, there is no opportunity whatsoever for an aircraft, or is there a helipad or something where a chopper might come in emergencies? I mean, how do you deal with emergencies and no airstrip?
Exactly right. The way we were doing it over the last few days since the 21st was through the great assistance from the EMQ and District Disaster Management Group in Cairns. They were able to swing a helicopter out of Cairns for us to use. The problem with that, though, was the cost borne for general type of travel was going to be put back onto the community council, which is us. And again, my feedback to government was, how could they expect us to pay for the cost of the chopper when the communities can't sustain that? We're one of the most disadvantaged communities in Australia, and in 2006 census we were the third most disadvantaged community in the state of Queensland. The 2011 census, I don't think that has changed too much. So government put the helicopter out of here, and we appreciated that. But we need assistance if the airport was still going to be closed. How were people going to pay for that chopper? Because the chopper was costing $1,600 a round trip to go from here to Pomperau. And that was something that our community could not sustain.
How long in the air, how long is that in the chopper to go across to Pomperau, just a one way over?
Probably 40 minutes to an hour round trip, like over and back.
Right, yep, and that's in the chopper. Yeah. And that's $1,600 cost per person?
No, per flight? For the round trip.
For the flight. Yes, how many people can you fit in that chopper then? How many people one time?
Four people.
Okay.
Four people.
So say if you divvied it up, it'd be four people paying $400 each to go over there and back. Now, you get to Pomperau, Robbie, and then you've got regular flights over there, like a flight a day or so?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, and then we would have to pay $500 maximum fare to fly out of Pomperau then. So, yeah, and I brought it to the attention of government. The community wouldn't have been able to sustain, they'd say, sustain that type of cost. So, thankfully, our airport was reopened on Friday, yeah, unless the community wouldn't have been able to bear that cost.
Was there much need for the chopper? I mean, it would have been used a few times, I imagine, in the 10 days that the airstrip was closed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And essentially, it was mainly used for the really essential stuff, like the evacuating people out for medical treatments in Cairns. The majority of it was used by Queensland Health. There was some cost borne on community through the council to get essential staff back into the community and stuff like that. So, but for the general person out in our town of Kalinyama, they wanted to go to Cairns for the weekend, they would not have been able to afford it. They would have to pay for one person if they wanted to charter that chopper, and they had no other people to fly with them. They would have to pay $1,600 to the chopper, then $500 to go to Cairns, and then $500 to come back from Cairns to Pomperau, and then another $1,600 to get from Pomperau to Kalinyama. So for one person, they wouldn't have been able to sustain that year, and that's what we're trying to relay that to the relevant people out in the bigger world out there, yeah.
Robbie, do you think if this was a mainstream white fella community of 1,200 people, do you think the government might treat people a little better or a little differently, or what are your thoughts here? Do you think there's a bit of a sort of a neglect of First Nations communities such as yours in emergency situations or even in general like this? How do you feel about, what's your confidence in dealing with government? The fact that you've got this chopper to get you in there, but the community's got to bear the cost. All this issue about the funds for to repair the airstrip. Do you think the government would treat a mainstream community of similar size and population in the same way?
Well, my memory goes to our... goes back to the major floods, I think, in 2009 and or such like that in the Gulf here again and the community of Karumba. Their airstrip was down for a long period of time as well. So because we're close to Karumba, I think the length of time it took, we had to allow that time to actually reassess our airport and that sort of stuff. But it would have been interesting to see what action would have been taken if our airport was closed on a more permanent basis. I know it was difficult and I know it took a long time for government to come out, but at the end of the day, it was probably good that we erred on the side of caution. But yeah, the government needs to respond a lot more quickly than what we've had in the past year.
Karumba, in that flood, they had to have a big upgrade of their airport?
Exactly right, and that's the message I was trying to give across to people out in Cairns and that sort of stuff, is that if big infrastructure dollars can be put in a place like Karumba, then surely that type of infrastructure dollars has to be put in our community. Like you say, we've got 1,200 people in the community, and that's what we need to have maintain our services is our airport, yeah.
What's the population of Karumba, you think?
400 or 500.
What? Or 500 people, definitely. So it's much, much smaller than Kalinyama.
Yes, yeah, way smaller, yes. Yeah.
Well, there's a precedent there, and there should be some leverage that your council can apply some pressure to the authorities to sort that situation out at Kawanyama. I mean, it's...
And what the frustrating thing here is for us, me as an Indigenous person in a fairly senior role in the Shire Council and the elected members, is that we brought it to the state government and even the federal government's attention at elected member level, at the local members of parliament in the both spheres, federal and state government, that service our region. Our mayor and our CEO met, had a delegation with the ministers at the community cabinet meeting in Cairns back in June last year. So there was plenty of notice given to the funding authorities about the predicament of our airport. And the frustrating thing is, those that information wasn't probably high priority enough to the government. And this is where we're at now. So that's the main frustrating thing of our community at the moment, is that we tried to bring it to the funding bodies authorities' attention that if we don't do something with the airport, it's going to be closed, and our words were true. So it's very, very hard and difficult to work when our messages are fell on deaf ears. Yet.
When did you raise that at the community cabinet? What was the end of last year, sometime, or what? When was that?
That was the community cabinet held in Cairns in June 2012. We had a delegation go to that, and we met with Minister for Local Government and the Indigenous Affairs Minister. And again, that was the same time that there was a lot of cost-cutting going through the state government then. That was handed up. We got the thank you for your application letter. Funds are not available. We've referred this to the state, to the federal government. We got a letter back from federal government that airport program dollars are now finalised. You have to put in a bid next year. And weather doesn't wait for anybody. So that's the frustrating thing for our community in Kawanyama. People not listening to what we're trying to tell them.
Exactly. Who's your local member for your part of there? What minister?
David Kempton. David Kempton is the state minister, state MP.
Right.
And we have a Senate member in that serves our region too, and her name is Jan McLucas. So she's from the Labor side of politics. Then we got the House of Representatives member, which is Warren Inch, which is Liberal Party. So he's Liberal with the federal government, yes.
What would you like people, any listeners tuned in, would you like them to sort of make some contact, do something, an email, put some pressure, bring pressure to bear and say, don't forget about the Kawanyama mob?
Yeah, definitely. If all the Murrays out there are thinking about us, if you want to throw some support around and when you're talking to your local members out there, just remind everybody, don't forget to think about the our brothers and sisters up on the Cape there. Yeah,
yeah, and I think it's not just Murrays. I mean, we've got a big mob of mainstream listeners, big mob whitefellow listeners here to this station as well. And I think it would serve well for any listener, every listener, just to get online, even if you don't have access to a computer, make a phone call. Pencil to paper, write a letter to the Premier, particularly the Premier, and that local member up in Kawanyama, David Kempton, and even Jan McLucas, a federal senator. Let those people know that you as a listener here in Brisbane and across the country, know the situation with Kawanyama community, and you demand, as a member of the public, as a taxpayer, you demand that the government does something about this airstrip situation in Kawanyama. We've got to get behind these people. Just because they're so isolated and a lone voice out there in the wilderness doesn't mean to say they don't have rights and that they shouldn't have access to essential services like their airstrip. Let's take a break, Robbie, for a song, and we'll come back. There's a few things that I'd like to talk about while I've got you online. There's a cultural centre you're trying to raise funds for. I'd like to get a bit of an update on the housing. I was up there about 2 years ago and there was a big housing program underway, new homes being built. There's a few things. There's a planned review of the alcohol management plan. So we've got a few things to talk about while you're with me.
No worries.
It was a bit of a late start for the wet this year, Robbie, this season?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, we anticipate a road closure around Christmas time, but it stayed open right up to the week before that cyclone. Yeah, so the wet season, monsoon rain, was slow coming, all right, yeah.
Does that mean it'd be a little later in the year for them to finish? When does it normally finish?
We usually get first transport out of here, or road open, around the first week in June. So hopefully it doesn't extend the wet season. But yeah, we need the rain as well, you know. So I think it's catch 22 for us more over here.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, it'd be good if it was a short wet season. Start late and still finish on time. Yeah.
That's him, yeah. Which ain't here.
Yeah. Now tell me, the housing. There were some new developments up there, and it was just some 2 years since I've been up there with the end of funding for training some of them young fellas up there. I mean, them young Brumby boys are two of our stars. There's very fond memories of Frankie and Reggie down here, and Felina, their sister, the triplets, those three. It's a couple of years since I've been up there. There were new houses being built, and quite a bit of work going on in the community. What is the situation with housing? You've had some new houses that they've been completed, and anything else new? You've been talking about a culture centre up there.
Yeah. There was the program was going to roll out earlier last year in terms of our housing, again, through the National Partnership on Indigenous Housing, through the state and federal government one. They were supposed to roll out last year, but with the change of government, there was a different way that they wanted to tender and different types of house designs. So that had to be held up for about 4 months, which then put our building program back 4 months. Again, with the isolation of our wet season and stuff, the construction work will start this year in the dry season. And prior to that, prior to that, we got funding around 2011 to do a subdivision to allow us to put the houses on the subdivision. And that was funded through Department of Environment, Resources and Management, I think. We got some funding out of that to help us build a subdivision. Now we've got the subdivision in place. The housing program is going to roll out as soon as the dry season opens. The roads open after the dry season.
Yeah.
And I think we've got about 17 houses to be put up this year, which will be greatly received by the community.
Of course. Now, there's issues that arise here. I mean, and again, the cost. When we think back to no rate-based income for First Nations Shire Councils, and you get money for houses. Over in Cairns, it might cost you $300,000 to build, say, I'm just plucking a figure out of my ear, it might cost you $300,000 to build a house. It must go close to double that. I mean, because of your isolation, because of air transport, road transport, I suppose, you'd have a lot of that coming in by road, because I've seen some of them big semis and that drive into town from time to time. But the cost of building houses must escalate considerably.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. A few years ago, there was the cost of building major constructions on the Cape. I think Kohanyama was identified as being up to 2.5 times more than what it would cost in Cairns. So, yeah. if a industrial shed in Cairns was built for $100,000, it would cost $250,000 here.
Yeah. Yep. So the money you get for housing might sound big sometimes. It might be $10, $50, $20 million for housing, but when a house is costing you somewhere near maybe $750,000 or so, you're not getting. It's just people need to be mindful of that. Just the difference,
yes,
the hardship, what you have to deal with, the challenges of living in remote communities like this, and then some mob say, go on.
Yeah, the other thing too that the council have been very cautious on is that we've been cautious on taking on these new houses, because one of the funding requirements is that we allow the state government to build new houses on our communities, but there is a 40-year lease over the houses. And back in 2008, when this Labor government rolled this program out, the community and the council, through the vision of the community, resisted signing over all of our houses, because we don't want the whole community signed over for 40 years and being run by the state again. We're going back to the old superintendent days and manager's days, you know, and those assets. And we're just slowly, cautiously allowing the state government to come in, because there's no other avenue to build houses in our community, which is very, very hard for our community to deal with.
Yes, well, it's very good that the community and council stayed strong in regards to that 40-year lease. That's just outrageous. And I mean, as if the government's got a good track record in managing housing for anybody. They haven't got a good track record in managing housing for their own mob, the dominant culture, mainstream Australians, let alone want to take control of blackfellow housing, eh?
Yes, exactly right. And that's what we've been saying here for a long, long time. Kawanyama uniquely has been one of the better communities in terms of rental income. We don't have rental arrears. And even because of that good record, we still get thrown in the same basket and say, well, you can't manage your housing stock. We'll do it for you for the next 40 years because you little boys can't handle it properly, which is wrong because we're one of the better communities, better managed communities in terms of tenancy management on the Cape and in the state of Queensland, and we're being put in one basket, you know, which is unfortunate.
That's a great achievement to have, to not have an issue with arrears with your housing income, your rentals. I mean, that's a great achievement, and that should be recognised. But instead of being recognised and being supported, you're being penalised because of the mistakes of others or inadequacies in other places. You're being penalised because of your success.
Yeah.
Or regardless, not because of your success, regardless of your success, you're penalised. That success is not recognised.
Yes, and for we had Minister David Crisafulli come up to Kawanyama in the middle of last year as well, not long after the state election, and he came to our community and he made a statement to the council, which unfortunately I wasn't there for the meeting because I was away, that we got good rental returns and we should aim higher, and for the state government to come out and say that, when we know that they can't even manage their tenancies and they've got so many multi-million dollars in rental arrears, and he's trying to ask us to improve when we're way better. We're running a way better tenancy management system than the state ever does.
it's a joke sometimes, brother. You know, if it wasn't so serious, you'd be laughing every day about these inadequacies of people like this. Yeah, it's really sad.
One other major infrastructure development that we want to see. Built in our community and we want to fundraise for is the Kawanyama Cultural Centre. The Kawanyama community is blessed to have a historical collection of artefacts that has a certificate of national significance from the Queensland Museum. We've got a Facebook page called Kawanyama Project. All you Facebook users out there, have a look at that project, throw your support behind it. And the Kawanyama project on the Facebook page is trying to get as many people to frequent the site to help us to raise funds to get our cultural centre built to the way that we want it to be built here.
All right. Now, that'd be good. So where are those artefacts being housed at the moment?
We got funding through the state government again back in 2008, I think, when the state was celebrating their 150th birthday. We got Q150 funding to build a coordinator's house for the cultural centre, and part of that house we're housing our collection now. But we need far better housing for our artefacts. In terms of climate control and that sort of stuff.
We're doing
the best we can now, but we're trying to raise those funds here to build a bigger and better place to house a collection that has a national significance here.
So you built a coordinator's house, but he needs a project to coordinate, or he needs somewhere to house that there's plenty to coordinate, I suppose, with artefacts and things like that and what the museums hold, but you need somewhere for proper storage of it, is what you're saying.
Yes. And because we've done a lot of groundwork now, we're starting to even talk to museums to allow some of their stuff they hold in their museums to allow them to be displayed back here in Kawanyama. But until we get our purpose-built centre, we can't achieve that yet.
And you've got a position for that, a spot identified where that would go?
Yes, we've got that spot identified, and we even got one of our local Indigenous people here trained by Queensland Museum on how to use the software, computer packaging to catalogue all of our artefacts. We're a long way progressed. All we need is that identified space now, which will be a really benefit to our community here.
Well, you certainly need the money. You got the land to build it on. You got people trained and ready. You got the caretakers, the coordinators, accommodation built. It's slowly coming together in bits and pieces. So let's hope that there can be enough pressure brought to bear on the establishment, on the authorities to see that to happen. Tell me about the there's talk of a review of the AMPs, the alcohol management plans. Looking back over, what have you had, some 6 or 7 years of that now? How long has the AMP been in place, 5 or more?
Come December this year, it'll be 10 years since we've had alcohol management plan.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
10 years.
Okay. What is your feeling reflecting back on prior to 10 years and then in the past 10 years? How do you see things? There's some benefits in that and some not so good things happening, or what?
In the middle stages of the AMP, there were some benefits, especially when we had a licensed premises under community, and then that allowed people to have a bit of a social outlet. Now, since 2008, we have had no licensed premises. Through an Act of Parliament of the State of Queensland, the Labor government, they stopped their canteen licences in our community. So since then, the AMP has gone downhill because, again, you need untold resources to ensure full prohibition in our communities. And the state government don't have those resources in terms of law enforcement in our community. So it's starting to fail dramatically now, drastically.
With prohibition, there'd be a lot of people attracting criminal charges, I suppose, for being in breach of the AMP. Has that been the case?
Oh, yeah, and the community now is starting to feel that because a lot of people have been fined and convicted and fined. And through the state penalties enforcement regulations, PERS, people are fined through that. And then when they don't pay their fine, they get their driver's licenses suspended. So it causes a major disruption in community life.
IG, not very good.
And again, we're probably still the third most disadvantaged community in the state of Queensland, and people are getting big fines who are welfare recipients would have Buckley's chance to none to pay the fine before they die, and yet magistrates are still ruling $2,000 and $3,000 fines when our people don't have income to pay that sort of thing, you know.
And as a result of failing to pay, their license is suspended. That doesn't mean to say, I would think a number of those people with suspended license would drive anyway, so they attract more fines and dig a deeper hole for himself, or what?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Yeah.
It's just a vicious circle.
It just gets worse and worse.
We welcome the state government's plan to review AMPs, but yeah, I'm pessimistic in that regard as well. The state government was saying, yeah, we're gonna change the AMPs if we get into power. Then they've slowly reverted back now to the bureaucratic nonsense that we used to hear from the Labor government and their public servants.
Yeah, because that was one of the big statements of Campbell Newman, stating that he was going to review the AMPs. He didn't think it was right that First Nations people had these sorts of restrictions imposed on them when every other Australian was able to go and have a beer if they wish. He was making big statements, was he not?
Yeah, exactly like that now, saying that.
Exactly.
Then he had ministers saying that, and then it evolved over very quickly over the course of the remainder of last year that they're going to be as restrictive as the Labor government were in regards to AMP. So I was telling our community out there like that. They were saying, oh, it's good, they're going to be changing AMP. I said, no, over the length of time, we're not going to see no changes here because there's too many issues that are still underlying in regards to the AMPs, and it'll be very hard for the state government to come in and change something.
Yes, I feel that was just a boat buying, a boat buying. Yeah, you certainly need some boat up there too, I suppose. Boat buying exercise by the little man, Candu Campbell, who is now Premier. I would think that was just a vote-buying exercise. Again, another false promise made by yet another politician, something that not only First Nations people but dominant culture mob, we've all seen it. We've all seen governments come and go, and we'll continue to see them come and go until we depart this earth, I suppose. It's a sad state of affairs where people that would like to have a beer cannot have a beer. What do you think could work in place? Has the community had any programs in place? But before that, what's the limit? What's the carriage load under the AMP? And then has the community had something in place before the AMP? Or what are the views of the community in order to manage alcohol issues? But what's the carriage you would carriage load at the moment? What's allowed?
Our carriage limit is zero, so we've got no carriage limit, just like Aracoon. So yeah, it's illegal to have any form of alcohol in Kohanyama presently.
And there's nowhere to drink in Kohanyama. There's no canteen or nothing, you said. So there's nowhere to drink. No. So people can only drink outside the boundaries of the AMP.
Yes, or like you say, break the law and drink in their own homes and sneak the alcohol in, which we see happen regularly during the dry season. Yeah. Prior to the AMP, the community of Kohanyama felt that they were managing alcohol to an extent when we had a 10 to 10 license, Monday to Saturday. The community with that license restricted the trade on that license to only open 10 o'clock on a Friday and then 2 o'clock every other day and then a couple of hours on Saturday to allow the bottle shop to operate. So prior to the AMP, we felt that we were managing the alcohol in a fairly reasonable way. But there was a lot of that violence going on out in their communities. And since the AMP, the violence has dropped a little bit, but not a lot. So the AMP really, when you look back 10 years ago, it hasn't made major changes to our community because the community is still suffering a lot of violence, a lot of conflict and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, unless resources are put into to assist the offenders of those sorts of things, then AMPs won't work.
No, it's just not good, Robbie. Let's hope the review might you might get some wins with the review. My brother, it's getting close to news time. I'm going to play a song when you go. You might want to leave the phone on and put the speaker system on. It's Archie Roach singing that Kohanyama song, Many Rivers Rise. But look, thank you for joining me. I appreciate you joining me. I'm going to try to contact you every couple of weeks for updates, and I will try to pursue the a couple of people in Parliament, the local minister up there, your local member, and maybe even Campbell Newman and people. We've got to try and bring some pressure to bear and help your mob. Put our shoulder behind the wheel and do what we can down here. So thanks for joining us, and we will be in touch, all right?
Thank you very much.
You have a good day, my brother.
Okay, righty. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, you'll talk to me later, all right. Don't worry. Thank you. Bye now. Righty.